Hey, this is Corey Heidelberger with Dakota Free Press, and we're speaking with Senator Lance Russell from District 30 out in the Black Hills. Senator Russell, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
And you've come to beautiful metropolitan Aberdeen. What brings you to Aberdeen today?
Well, I was invited to come speak to the Reagan lunch of the Brown County Republican Party, so I thought that would be a great opportunity for me to come introduce myself to some of the folks up here.
Sure. Have you been up to visit Brown County before?
I have. I came one time this year for the Lincoln Day dinner. And before that, when I was in student government at Black Hills State and the University of South Dakota, I would come up to Regents meetings here. But that's been quite a long time ago.
Now, the press for this event mentioned that you are looking at running for Attorney General next year rather than seeking to re-up in the legislature. Is that true? Are you going to run for Attorney General?
That is correct. I am putting both feet in the water and trying to test it out, see if I'll have the support to run this cycle.
Now, running for Attorney General, as I understand it, it's not like running for legislature or even for governor. You don't stand in the primary. It's a different process to get on the ballot. Tell us about that process.
That is correct. Unlike the state Senate, which you file for in January or February, and you run on a primary ballot in the June primary and then the general election in the fall, for the Attorney General job, you actually run at a convention made up of delegates from across the state, usually between 300 and 400. And those folks are normally your chairman of your local party, your state committee people, and also precinct committee people that are elected at the local level. And those folks select who the Republican and the Democratic nominee are, and then they face off in the regular general election in the fall.
So that selection process, I mean, instead of, you know, several thousand voters statewide, you're talking about maybe even a few hundred, if
yes,
that many delegates?
Probably anywhere between 300 and 500.
Okay, so a much smaller sample, and we're talking about people who, well, I haven't been to a Republican convention, so I don't want to mischaracterize it, but I think, you know, folks looking at the process would say, oh, the folks at the convention are probably, do I dare use the term party elites, party insiders? What's the right way to characterize that crowd?
What I would suggest is there are some elites, but there's also a lot of grassroots activists, mm-hmm. people that are inspired by the president, maybe, or the platform of the party, or something of that nature. So a lot of them are very conservative members of the local Republican parties, because it all comes out of their pocket to come here mm-hmm. to the convention, which will be held in Pierre next year, and participate for 2 or 3 days. And it's not glamorous for them. They do it for essentially the sake or the cause of the party.
Sure. Now, as I've followed your voting record and your activities in Pierre and, you know, in state politics, I get the impression that if there are party elites and there are party kind of grassroots conservatives, your strength is maybe more in that latter group. You don't strike me as a party insider or a party elite, especially with some of your challenging of certain decisions state government has made. So looking at a typical Republican convention, what do you think your chances are for getting a nomination when you've got elites, insiders, and kind of the grassroots contending for control or majority at a convention?
Well, what I would suggest is I'm probably in both camps to some degree. And the reason I would say that is my time in Pierre, I've probably been more of someone who wants to not necessarily toe the party line, but do what I believe is the right thing to do. And so that puts me more, I think, on the side of the grassroots. But my experience right out of college, well, before that even, I was chairman of the local College Republicans and vice chairman of the State College Republicans, but I eventually was hired to be the, after a number of campaigns, hired to be the executive director of both the Pennington County Republican Party and then later the South Dakota Republican Party. So I've held those two positions, so I've been kind of around a lot of the rank and file for a number of years.
Now we have, I guess as it stands right now, have there been two others who've announced their intentions?
Three.
Who are those three?
My former boss, John Fitzgerald. I worked for him as a deputy state's attorney in Lawrence County. He's running.
Okay.
a former law school classmate, Jason Roundsburg, and a guy that I've known for years, Charlie McGuigan, who's the Deputy Attorney General with Marty Jackley.
Boy, we are all related, aren't we?
We are. It's a very close bunch because I know all of them and I like all of them. Mm-hmm.
So you like all of them. Can you share with us your strategy for crushing all of them at the convention?
Oh, I don't have a strategy for crushing them at the convention, but I do believe that I do have a varied experience that would be very helpful. One, of course, I've worked as a prosecutor in the Pennington County Republican Party, in the Pennington County State's Attorney's Office, the Lawrence County State's Attorney's Office, and then as State's Attorney for Fall River and Shannon County for 8 years. I've subsequently been in the legislature for the last 8 years in the House of Representatives, and then just my first year in the State Senate. And I've seen how both the public policy side of it can really hamper the ability of the prosecutors to do their job, and kind of, so I have both sides of that. I understand what the what tools the prosecutor needs and how the legislative process can either help or hinder the prosecutors in doing what they need to be doing, and to get done.
Sure. Now, tell us a bit then, I mean, you've been a legislator for several terms. How many terms now?
I termed out, which means I served 4 terms in the South Dakota House of Representatives, and then I was elected last year to the State Senate.
And this is all from District 30, the Hot Springs, Southern Black Hills, that area, correct?
Pretty much everything south of the Rapid City municipality line in Pennington County.
Sure. So, I mean, given your long career in the legislature, Attorney General, it's a different position. You have to, you run statewide ultimately in the general election. Would you view moving up to or over to Attorney General as an extension of the work you've tried to do in the legislature? Or do you view this as kind of a new focus, a new chapter in your political activity? How do the two link up?
Well, they link up because the Attorney General every year proposes a number of bills. I think this year there were 13 bills proposed by the Attorney General. And this last year, the Senate Judiciary Committee, which I was chairman of, we passed out all of his bills. I think one or two of them may have gotten defeated somewhere in the legislative process, but for the most part, his bills were passed into law, and they made some good corrective changes. And so there's a component that goes with the Attorney General's office as to policy that for law enforcement and for prosecutors across the state, that I've got a little bit of experience in that area also. So I would say that it's not necessarily 100% the same job, but of course there are some components of it that are similar.
And like you said, as a prosecutor, as an attorney, those are issues that have been a big deal for you as a legislator.
Yes.
And this would be a chance to kind of affect it from the other direction in Pierre.
That's correct.
So looking at the work that the current Attorney General's office has done, Attorney General Marty Jackley, he's termed out this year. Give us your assessment of the work that's been done by the Attorney General's office over the past 9 years.
I think that he's done a pretty good job with the cards that he was dealt. I do believe, though, that we have made some policy changes that have adversely affected his ability to do his job. And you can kind of, you can see it in a measurable way in the violent crime, how it's appreciated over the last number of years. We have property crimes are up, crimes essentially across the board, but the most
statewide, not just in any
yes,
one locality.
Statewide.
This is a statewide trend you're talking about.
And my concern is that the violent crime component of it has gone up dramatically. And you can look these up on the U.S. federal crime statistics. They have a nice graph for all of South Dakota. They have it categorized by violent crime and also by property crime. But you'll note that in the last number of years, it has essentially in some areas of violent crime doubled, like aggravated assaults, which are serious bodily injury, life-threatening type of bodily injury, or pointing a gun at somebody, something very, very concerning. They've about doubled since 2009.
And if I heard right what you said at the beginning of that response, it sounded like you were saying we've put in policies that have hindered the Attorney General and I guess law enforcement in general's ability to fight that crime. Who's the we and what are the policies? Are you talking state, federal? Where's the hindrance coming from?
Well, it's a combination of things, but it's been led, I think, out of Washington, D.C., but South Dakota adopted large portions of it when we passed Senate Bill 70 in 2011 or 12 or 13, somewhere in there.
That was the big criminal justice reform package that the governor promoted, correct?
Yes, and the problem with it was, in my estimation, that we created a situation where we were trying to save costs to the state. And instead of when we saw this meth problem coming for the second time, this isn't the first time that we had this. We had it also when I was state's attorney. We had a fairly significant increase and then it dropped off. But what we did was is we created presumptive probation and local incarceration. It used to be that the judges could only sentence someone to 6 months in the county jail. And if you were going to sentence somebody longer than that, they would have to go to the state penitentiary. Instead of beefing up or making it more effective, putting the resources into having the kind of inpatient treatment opportunities in the correction system, what we did was is we expanded from 6 months to a year the amount of time that these people could be forced to be put in the Brown County Jail or the Fall River County Jail.
In the local jails instead
yes.
of other programs or other in the pen.
And so all it really was a cost shift.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, the local jails are bursting at the seams in most communities in the state, and they don't have any help. I mean, there's nothing that these people, if they serve 6 or 8 or 12 months in the Brown or the Fall River County Jail, they're not getting the kind of treatment help that they need. And so you're essentially warehousing them and then you're turning them back onto the streets in a short period of time and they haven't kicked their habit, so they just keep reoffending. And when you keep reoffending and you have this spiral, it spirals off into a lot of property crimes to steal in order to get what you need to survive. And then the violence, of course, is another factor. And I think that it's obvious that that's what's happened. The murders have been up. This year they've dropped off a little bit in 2016, but for the most part, I think they were up 66% from 1 year to the next. And like I already alluded, the aggravated assaults have just gone through the roof.
So from that perspective, and that's interesting, you're saying Senate Bill 70, the criminal justice reform from a few years ago, it was sold as cost savings, but it was really cost shift. We're spending the same amount. It's just, I think what you're saying is the state budget looks better, but for the most part, those dollars have been shifted to out-of-pocket costs for county government, local government. Is that correct?
It's been shifted to the local governments and the individuals because the individuals aren't getting the help, and so it's just a spiraling cost for the local governments.
What does the Attorney General do then to fix that problem? It sounds like, I mean, number one is the Attorney General needs to come back to the legislature and say, fix that criminal justice reform. I assume that's part of the agenda. Are there other things the Attorney General can do to alleviate this problem of increased crime and the local cost shift?
Well, like I said, his hands are tied to some degree under the current formula. And so there will have to be some changes made to that. He did bring a small change to the presumptive probation that wouldn't be vetoed by the governor. And we did get that through. So that will help on your more serious felonies, removing the presumptive probation on just a few areas. But it's going to have to be, we need to unshackle the judges. The judges need to have the discretion to look at the situation and make the appropriate, it's just as bad as having federal minimum sentences. What we have in South Dakota is essentially maximum sentences or ceilings on a crime that could get you a class 4 felony, which is a possession, manufacture, and in some cases distribution of controlled substance. That could land you up with a sentence of up to 10 years in the state penitentiary. But under the current system, it's a presumptive probation to the county jail and a certain amount of days in the county jail. And then, you know, the judge may try to have some treatment options, but when you're addicted to meth and you have the same number of you're with the same friends, and you're in the same community, and you have the same access. Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't take, in most cases.
There's a combination here. The Attorney General can't fix all these things, but an important part of your job as Attorney General will be to use that bully pulpit to speak as our top cop and say, hey, legislature, these are the policies that are keeping me from keeping South Dakota safe.
Exactly.
In terms of the current administration, I do want to ask about some of, you know, the government corruption and some of the prosecutions that have gone on, particularly, you know, you've heard this come up before and you've even spoken on these issues, the EB-5 scandal and the Gear Up scandal. Both involving federal dollars, both involved crimes committed by South Dakotans, apparently, misappropriating these funds, and ultimately involving individuals taking their own lives. And in the case of the Gear Up scandal, taking the whole family's lives. Why didn't Attorney General Jackley catch the criminal activity in those events sooner?
Well, if you'll look at my record, and I can give you after the interview the exact bill number, but as a prosecutor, I realized that there were insufficient tools in order to bring some of these public corruption type of prosecutions in South Dakota. We just don't have we literally did not have the tools. So either in my first or second year of the legislature, I sponsored a bill based upon some Ohio statutes that created a commission and created certain crimes in order to effectuate actually going after public corruption or public, having an interest in a contract, those types of cases. Unfortunately, it was sent to the State Affairs Committee, and within 2 or 3 weeks of my introduction of it, and I put a lot of work into it, it was killed, and it was summarily killed. And I didn't get it. I mean, I really could not understand it. This was still during the Rounds administration. And I was very frustrated by that. And I think that some of the problems that we've had with EB-5 and with Gear Up, if we would have had more tools like that in the toolbox, that we could have, that Marty Jackley could have actually had strong and successful prosecutions. But I think that his hands were tied to a large degree.
Sure. So looking ahead and looking optimistically, let's say, 2019, you get to come in and be Attorney General. As things stand right now, do we have better tools? Would you as Attorney General be able to go sniff out, prevent, or at least nip in the bud similar corruption if it's taking place?
The nice thing is that Marty fought very hard this last legislative session to get a criminal conflict of interest statute put into place. Just started July 1st. So we do have one more tool in the toolbox. But what I will tell you is that it's not enough. There needs to be more. And I will, if I'm elected Attorney General, be proposing more legislation in order to effectuate that. If Marty brings additional bills this coming session,
right,
I'm going to try and work with him to pass those also.
Yeah, we certainly have one more session before we change administration, so there's certainly time to do more. What do you think those additional protections should look like? If you can give an example, I know it's a complicated issue, but what could we do to make it easier for the state and for the Attorney General to investigate, to find, and to prosecute and put people away for public corruption?
Yeah, and I do have a what my bill number was and when. It was House Bill 1288 in 2009, which would have prohibited unlawful interest in public contracts and made it a crime. That's, I think, the tool that we need.
And we don't have that now. You're saying that Marty Jackley's measure, even though it was a good one this year, doesn't go as far as that.
It didn't go far enough.
Okay.
And the thing is that we created an accountability board and some other things, but we limited the scope of it.
How so? How was it limited?
Well, it was limited only to the executive branch and not to some of the other branches of the government. And there were some provisions placed in there, and there were a number of bills. And I may confuse one or two of them. But essentially, if you go in and file a criminal complaint, you can file an anonymous criminal complaint by calling 911. And the cops go out and they investigate it. Well, under our new system, in our new bill, if you're going to make a complaint about a legislator or someone else, you have to have it notarized. And there are, essentially what it's doing is, unfortunately, discouraging people from coming forward.
Sure.
Because what we want to do is we want people to come forward and have certain protection, especially when they're dealing with the people in power. And so we need stronger whistleblower protection. We need the ability to file anonymous complaints, just something that simple.
And it would seem, especially if we're talking public corruption, that's not the kind of thing a passerby on the sidewalk notices and calls in anonymously. It's pretty much that information
insiders.
Is going to come. Yeah, an insider, someone who works in the office, sees the numbers, and thus needs that whistleblower protection you're talking about.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, you've got to go speak to the Brown County Republicans this noon. Is there anything else you'd like the general population of voters to know about why you want to be South Dakota's next Attorney General?
I simply want the government to be more open and more transparent with the people. I want the contracts to be available. I want us to have a strong FOIA request system.
So public records, freedom of information.
People can get public records, public contracts, and know what their government is actually doing. And then, of course, to make our communities safer. I think that over the past number of years, South Dakota has gotten a lot more dangerous because of criminal activity. And I think that we need to have stronger laws in order to effectively prosecute violent crime in South Dakota.
Senator Lance Russell, Republican from Hot Springs, District 30 in the legislature right now, hoping to become South Dakota's next Attorney General. Thanks for visiting with Dakota Free Press.
Thank you.